Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
What do a Super Bowl champion, a Hall of Famer, and a Supreme Court justice all have in common? Well, they all started at NFL draft pick number 15. This is the draft spot that produced the first ever defensive MVP, Alan Page. But the greatness at 15 doesn't stop at the 70s. In the relentless motor of JPP to the hard-hitting legacy of Derek Johnson, pick 15 is where teams find their defensive pulse. Today, we're digging into the lore of the 15th overall selection in the NFL draft. Ed Cleese is our guest, as always, as we have 32 days counting down here on Pigskin Dispatch. Welcome to the Pig Pen. You're in the NFL draft history.
Hey, Darren, how are you today?
I am doing super, Ed. You know, we are over the hump, you know, starting to go downhill as we start to gain a little bit of momentum and talk about some really outstanding players here drafted in the top 15. And 15th spot is what we'll be looking at today.
Yeah, and I'd say don't get your hopes up for number 15. One thing I've been waiting for is when does the sea change? Meaning, you know, right now it's been kind of hit or miss with every pick, and I just keep thinking naturally, okay, as we get closer and closer to number one, these lists are going to get harder and harder. We'll have better and better players, and then it'll be like, okay, from this pick on, it seems to be a change. I'll tell you right now, when we talk about 15, we'll have done 15 through 32. And I do not see so far a terribly discernible difference between any of these pick numbers in their history in terms of, like, it's not getting better and better. It's more all over the place. You know, I think we talked about how we thought pick number 24 was one of our best and pick number 25 wasn't. And then we were really kind of impressed with number 16 that we did yesterday. And then completely unimpressed with 15. So it just kind of speaks to this, the nature of the draft and this inexact science. And even as we get higher and higher, it's not improving very much. And I'd say specifically the last 9 picks, I could find almost nothing. We've got, out of the last 9 number 15 picks taken, we've got 1 Pro Bowl between all of them combined. And that was Mac Jones at quarterback, made a Pro Bowl in his rookie year. In 2015, Melvin Gordon, he had a couple of nice years as a running back, I guess, for really pushing it. And that's really about it in terms of anything recent, you know, into like last 15 years or so. Really, really rough.
Yeah, we have some rough times for the players. We have a little bit of tragedy to talk about in these selections, especially recent. And I guess that takes us into, you know, why don't you give us some of your honorable mentions here before you get into your top 5?
Sure. So we're going to talk about, in addition to Mac Jones, there have been 2 quarterbacks since 1980 taken at number 15. And again, kind of underwhelming. Tony Eason, taken by the Patriots in 1983, and Mark Wilson, taken by the Raiders in 1980. You know, Eason had a very brief amount of success with like the 85-86 Patriots. They went to the playoffs. They, of course, went to the Super Bowl. And ironically, in the 85 playoffs, they played the Raiders and Mark Wilson. So it was like the and Wilson had a very nondescript career, did not have a big career at all. And neither did Eason. He was kind of out within a few years. So that wasn't great. And then if we go on to just non-quarterbacks.
Well, before you get off those, I mean, it was kind of you know, both of those players, you know, both Eason and Wilson got drafted on teams that had a quarterback that was legendary that was leaving. You know, Stabler was a, you know, centerpiece of the Raiders for many years, and Wilson came in as sort of that heir apparent. You know, I know Plunkett ended up coming in there right around that same time too,
yes, but he wasn't planted him. Yeah.
And then, but Eason was replacing Steve Grogan, who had really a pretty outstanding career for the Patriots, save recent quarterbacks that the Patriots have had. And So, you know, they were put in a tough spot too as a rookie.
Yeah. And Eason, of course, was part of that 83 draft class. So not only does he have to deal with, you know, replacing Grogan, but, you know, he was always compared to, you know, Marino and Kelly and the other quarterbacks that were taken in that kind of infamous 83 draft.
Right, right. That's true. Very true.
Yeah. So I didn't find a whole lot in like the other busts. I had a, there was a whole lot of like average, decent players. Ty Hill is a cornerback taken by the Rams in 2006, only had 25 career starts. Jerome McDougal was taken by the 2003 Eagles. This, I think, would classify as a bust with zero starts and three career sacks. So if you take somebody 15th overall and they can never get on the field, that's really, really bad. Yetiel Green, this was kind of unfortunate. A long list of blown picks by the Dolphins. And he was 1997. And he missed his first two full seasons in the NFL with kind of devastating knee injuries, double ACL tears, and then he wound up with 18 catches in his third year, and he was done. So, and then I've got I wanted to bring this one up just because I wanted to see. Do you remember the name Huey Richardson?
Yeah, I remember. Okay.
All right, Huey Richardson, drafted in 91 by the Steelers. He had two tackles in his career for the Steelers and was traded to the Redskins for a seventh-round pick and never really made their – a mark in Washington either. But one thing that's interesting about him, he was inside the World Trade Center on 9/11. He was scheduled to have a meeting on an upper floor that got delayed, and he was in the bottom floor when the plane hit and was able to escape.
Wow. That's very fortunate.
Yeah. No kidding. And then in John Clay was drafted by the Raiders in 1987, an offensive lineman with only 10 career starts. And then in a long list of Jets busts, we had Ron, I think we pronounce it Farrow. He was the 84 Jets, 2 years, two sacks. Some rough times there.
Yeah, definitely not making the New York sack exchange with those numbers.
No, no, but that would have been right at the time. So they could have benefited if he would have panned out. You know, he would have made another, made that D-line even better. In terms of honorable mentions, this list is very short too. It was kind of like, I had Bruce Irvin in 2012. I had Booger McFarland in 1999. John Mobley was a nice linebacker, 1996 for the Broncos. The one guy that probably is worth talking about a little bit would be Albert Haynesworth in 2002, who was sort of known for signing that ridiculous contract with my Redskins prior to the 2008 season and then being an insane bust from there. Basically just didn't care, was apparently not the greatest dude off the field, didn't work hard, and flamed out, got his money and was done. But he really did there, Darren, at the beginning of his career for the Titans. He was really good for a little period.
So it's what you're saying is Washington is the place where great defensive linemen go to fizzle out their careers.
Yeah, there's plenty. Yeah, Dana Stubblefield.
I'm joking.
Yeah, no, there's plenty. There was Sean Gilbert was another guy we traded for. There was a lot. During about a 15-year period there in the late 90s and 2000s, where we were paying for guys that nobody else wanted to pay for, and we were the only ones that didn't seem to know why.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I don't think Haynesworth was a bad purchase. He was, you know, the top, one of the top defensive linemen going on, so you can't really fault them too much because they thought they were getting a marquee player. I think just the player, you know, maybe sat on his riches a little bit too much. His wallet was too fat for him to move around anymore.
The oral history of that, from what I've been, believe me, I've dug deep into it, was that they were bidding against themselves, that nobody else in the league was willing to go where they were. And that was one of those at midnight, the night free agency started, they fired up the private jet and they just asked Albert how much he wanted. And they were like, you know, by 5 a.m., we're going to have this deal done. Just not a smart way to do business. And you're bidding against yourselves and you lose.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so is that all for your honorable mentions?
That's it for honorable mentions.
Okay, let's get into your top five.
Eesh, it's going to be shaky. Number five, I've got Anthony Miller, a wide receiver taken in 1988 by the Chargers. He did go to five Pro Bowls, and again, we talk a lot about how in the old, you know, at that time, Pro Bowl meant more. He had five 1,000-yard seasons. That's really solid. He had 14 touchdowns when he transitioned to the Broncos in 1995. The 95 Broncos were really good. They got, the 95 Broncos were really good, and they had 14 touchdowns for that team. He didn't have a lot of – his catch numbers weren't huge, but his, like, yards per catch were, so he's kind of like a big-time player, a big play player, big play receiver that had a really a nice career.
All right. So who do you have at number four?
Number four, a brother of a guy that we had on this list before. So that's going to be good for both of them. That's number four, Mike Pouncey, center taken by the Dolphins in 2011. Of course, his brother played for the Steelers and was on our list. I'd say he was a bit overshadowed by his brother. He was not as good, and he was not as didn't have quite the accolades, but he was a four-time Pro Bowler and was considered one of the top players at his position for several years.
Yeah, and people may wonder, they were twins, but ended up, Marquise came out a year earlier,
right?
A little bit better player, and they both played center in the NFL, so both had pretty good careers in the
yep.
NFL.
Yep, nice, yes.
All right, who do you have at number three?
Number three, I've got Derek Johnson, linebacker for the Chiefs, taken in 2005. He was sort of like your pure inside linebacker. He was not a pass rusher, that defensive end, the outside linebacker position. He was a big-time high-tackle guy. He took a little bit to hit his stride. He got off to a little bit of a slow start, and I think there were some whispers whether that they may have missed on him. But then he had a five-year stretch where he missed 1 year with injury in that stretch. But he had 100-plus tackles in all those years, four Pro Bowls, and two All-Pros mixed in. He ended with the Raiders, and he just missed the Mahomes era. So he was done. Like, he was out of Kansas City kind of right when Mahomes was coming in. So those Chiefs teams he played for were solid, good playoff-level teams, but not great. He is the Chiefs' all-time leading tackler, and I know that he is considered one of the best defensive players in Chiefs history. Definitely not a Hall of Fame guy, not a Canton guy at all, probably not even consideration. But, I think if you go into the Ring of Honor for your specific team at some point, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that definitely is. I think definitely worth getting that ranking in your ranking for the top five of the pick number 15.
Yep.
So who do you have above him?
Number two probably would be number one if it wasn't for a pretty unfortunate accident, and that is Jason Pierre-Paul, drafted in 2010, defensive end by the Giants. What a start to his career. First team All-Pro in his second year in the league with 16 and a half sacks. That's massive. Then he was in the Pro Bowl. Then he had some injuries. Then he had a 12-and-a-half sack season. He started for the 2011 Super Bowl champion Giants. And then after the 2014 season is when he had that fireworks accident and literally blew off like two or three of his fingers. And that really stunted his career. But what kind of gets him on this list is after it looked like maybe he was kind of just going to be a fade out, he had a resurgence with the Bucks. From like 2018 to 2020. So he had 30 sacks over those three seasons, and he was a really important player on the 2020 Bucks that won the Super Bowl. So he really bounced back strong. He's technically still active. He made a couple appearances last year for the Bucks. They signed him late in the year. But he's got 94 and a half career sacks, sacks in his career. And I would say that had it not been for that accident and he would have stayed a little bit more on track, he'd probably have, well over 100 and be a little bit higher on the list. He's, again, much like Johnson, he's not a Canton guy. It's not a Hall of Fame guy. It's not even a debate. But he's had a very nice career and was obviously a very good pick at number 15.
Yeah, I mean, especially early in his career when he's with the Giants, it's almost like you're looking at the Giants' defense line. You're like, going, how is this fair that they have, Michael Strahan that's getting all these sacks? I think JPP comes along, and they just had some really solid players up front that really put a lot of pressure. And that's probably why they won that, especially one Super Bowl against the Patriots. And giving Tom Brady some fits.
He was a key part of that for sure.
Yeah.
No doubt.
No doubt, yeah. All right, well, who do you have number one?
Number one, we're going to stay defense, and probably another guy that is similar to the other guys we've just talked about, and that's Dennis Smith, drafted all the way back in 1981, a safety for the Broncos. 14 years all with Denver, which I always kind of like. He had some injuries, so he missed some time in there. But once he turned 30 is about when he had his big run. So he turned 30, and then he went to the Pro Bowl 4 out of 5 years from there. He had 30 career interceptions. He had 5 years with 100 or more tackles. He led the league in tackles 1 year. He was a great pairing with Steve Atwater, who was obviously number one on our list when we did his pick number. He is fourth all-time in games played for the Broncos. He is first all-time in tackles for the Broncos, and he is also in their Ring of Fame. I kind of put him over the other guys because he had a little bit of a longer career and stuck around. And just one of those guys that, you know, Dick Enberg and, you know, Merlin Olsen calling those NBC games in the 80s mm-hmm. and the Broncos late in the afternoon. And like just Dennis Smith, always there. Dennis Smith. Just a very recognizable guy, very recognizable name to me. And again, not a super strong top five here. Not only do we not have any Hall of Famers since 1980, I would say not even too many that not really an argument for any of them, maybe Smith, but probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of how you could argue over that. I mean, those are five solid picks and really they were sort of the diamonds in the rough of picks number 15, especially right. Since 1980. But there is hope for pick number 15 because we do have two Hall of Famers, but they both played in the 1960s. Both in what we would today call the NFC North. Back in the day, it was the NFC Central. And that is number one is Jim Taylor, who was taken in 1958 by the Green Bay Packers. I believe he still has many of the Green Bay Packers rushing records and touchdowns. I'm not sure if yardage, but he's up there in a lot of those categories. And what an outstanding back. You know, Lombardi's Packers would not be the same if it wasn't for Jim Taylor and everything that he brought with his talents in the backfield. And another player you could almost say the same for was one of the Purple People Eaters, Alan Page, was drafted number 15 in 1967 by the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, Coach Bud Grant had an outstanding team going there. They made four Super Bowls. Alan Page was a big part of that, a great leader. Ended up becoming a judge, you know, winning the law.
Yeah, Minnesota, and, right? Yeah,
yeah. 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 So he laid down the law in football career. And in real life. So
it's, yeah, no doubt.
So, yes, two outstanding players from that, you know, the middle of the country there up north.
And both would easily be number one ahead of these other guys. No doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not even in the same class with the other folks that we talked about tonight. But yeah, really not much else to talk about. I mean, I guess you could say a little bit 1973, Isaac Curtis, wide receiver for the Bengals, you know, had a decent career, not Hall of Fame, but, you know, really solid player for them. And really, I can't really talk about too many other folks that really had great impact that we haven't already talked about.
Yeah, I agree. That was, it was kind of surprising when I was going through my list. I kept thinking, okay, well, I kept kind of scrolling, looking like, well, where's the really interesting one I'm going to talk about? And I just kept going and said, oh, he's not here. So, yeah.
All right. Well, but people may be wondering, you know, we looked at these 90 years of the NFL and what was the most popular position drafted at the 15th spot. I don't know that we talked about too many of them today in our top fives or even honorable mentions. Linebacker is the top pick at number 15. So maybe if your team's picking 15 this year, that's a chance they may have there. Had, of course, the two Hall of Famers we talked about. And that takes us to our draft stat of the day. And this is according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame website. The first draft had 9 rounds, and it was increased to 10 in 1937. But it was expanded to 20 rounds in 1939. Can you imagine sitting through a draft like that? All in one day, too, by the way, not 3 days like we have today. Adding a twist to this procedure, this is where it gets interesting. In 1938 and 39, only 5 teams that finished lowest in the previous season were permitted to make selections in the second and fourth rounds. So that's kind of... Okay. That's kind of bizarre by today's standards, but
I'm surprised the Jets haven't asked if we can bring that back.
Yeah, the Jets and the Browns, you'd think they'd be all over that right now trying to get that. But I don't think that would win over in this era. So
no, sir.
The NFL wants parity, so that's what they get. So, and it's kind of a fair system, and I think we want to keep it that way.
Right.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up our slot number 15. Folks, if you have missed some of the other episodes, we have 16 through 32 in the YouTube channel and on where you have your favorite podcasts on and on pigskindispatch.com. So check it out there. We probably have some links here in the show notes too. You can check out on both the podcast and YouTube channel. And stay tuned because we're going to have pick number 14 tomorrow. I'm joined once again by the guy sitting across from me right now. Many states away in Oklahoma, Ed Cleese. So, Ed, thank you for joining us tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
We'll see you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones, too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.